Welcome to ITE 1, Module 1, Part 1, because we're definitely going to need two parts for this baby, let me tell you. Okay, firstly, does anyone have any general administrative questions before we start covering what we need to cover today? Seriously?
Yeah, don't everyone speak up at once.
Absolutely.
If you really
fabulous.
Have them, we want to know.
Yeah, we do. We will help you. Now's the time.
Now, if we want a Birds of the Feather Max session, I just want to point out at this point that the server is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, so use the mailing list and tee up a time for you all to get together and Mac on.
Mac.
Yep.
Yeah.
I have one question.
Go ahead, what's your question?
We take and do the labs, we take and copy them into email and then send them on to the hardware class?
Yes. You send them to Kavi instructors at guts.net. You can either attach them or copy them into an email, whichever you prefer.
If you use Microsoft Word, if you use a table, it's probably better to attach it.
Yeah, I'd say. And if you are blind, please, I mean, unless you have a really good reason not to, I would strongly, strongly prefer you guys to use the non-graphical labs because they are smaller.
They're smaller.
That was my next question, actually. Thank you.
Please. If you're sighted, fine, you get a pass. You can use the graphical ones. That's okay.
Do we have non-graphical ones now?
Yeah, they just went up.
They're great.
Yeah, I did them, and it only took about 2 hours.
You almost got to do them, Aiden.
Yeah, I would have, but
I know.
Thanks for taking that shot.
Take caret G and replace it with nothing, and bye-bye go the pictures.
What were you saying? Sorry.
You take caret G and replace in the thing, and replace it with nothing, and the pictures go.
Pat has a question, Sean.
Oh, sorry.
In the labs, they keep referring to a computer. Are you talking about the same motherboard and the same case that it's previously used in the examples?
Yes. What we're doing is we're building a computer from the ground up. Now, if you are going to build your own computer, let me know and put in all of the specs for everything that you want to put in. You have to provide your own case. You have to provide your own motherboard. You can do that from the ground up if you'd like to. Otherwise, you use the framework that they've given you.
Are there any specifications on that computer that you've built it yourself?
No, it's whatever you want. It's your computer. You're building it, or you're pretending to build it. You could do whatever you want. As long as it fits together, I don't care what it is.
If you put
it could be your dream machine that you'll never be able to afford.
We're not going to pass you. If you go, I've got an Intel board and an AMD chip, fail. If you've got an AMD board and AMD chip, pass. If you've got an Apple Mac with an Amiga system board, fail. You've just got to make sure that the parts match.
Yeah, we don't really care. I'm not keying up.
Well, a Core i7 is the way to go.
If you've got the money, we've got a quad-core Athlon, and we're quite happy with it, and that was about $200 cheaper than the i7, and we're poor, so that's why we don't have i7.
Absolutely.
And one other question. How do we take notes best for your class? What's the best method?
That is up to you. It's on you how you take notes. You do have notes. You have lecture notes, and you saw those lecture notes up in ITE, in the actual ITE folder. Now, since those are your lecture notes, those are the curriculums. Those are more important than my lectures. Those have every answer in the test. Now, I'm going to try to do that in my lectures, but these are also to clear up confusion over concepts and talk about other ways of doing things as blind people. So, those notes are very, very important. So you can take your own notes. You don't have to. If you don't understand what I'm saying, Jamie, this goes for you, and you really need them. My notes are basically forensic-style notes, so I can possibly send them to you, and you will get almost exactly what I'm saying word for word.
I can actually hear you good. Your mic is coming through very clearly.
Oh, okay, good. Well, then we won't have to worry about that, because you really don't want to see this.
Half the Australian population has trouble understanding Grace, so we just thought we'd put that out there. The way she reads off phone numbers, you'd think you'd been machine gunned, and just can't pick it up, so it's all the accents you're used to and stuff. The other thing I'd point out to people is if you want to open a notepad document, you can type things into it as Grace Talks, or Text Edit, or Ed, or Edlin, if you're really feeling that desperate. So whatever editor you want to use, you can type your notes as she's talking away at stuff, if that suits.
You could also choose to load the lecture notes or the lecture recordings onto a book player that's bookmark capable or whatever, if you happen to have such a thing, and people have found that useful as well, to bookmark things that they either need to study or whatever. I didn't do that, but I know other people have.
Yeah, Jenny used to have her notes on her Victor Reader stream, and she would actually... press the bookmark button whenever we said this was in the test so that she could just go back and look at all the bookmarks.
Okay, someone said I was clipping. Am I too loud or am I actually cutting out?
No, you're actually staying keyed. You're actually staying keyed. You're not keyed now, or did you just go into setup?
It just sounds like you're breathing into the mic or something.
The other problem is that when I talk, it's that the microphone's actually sensitive.
There we go.
That should actually
stop that from happening.
Yeah.
Can I hit this close button and it'll still record, Carrie?
Which no. Close button?
In the Ventrilo record play window thing.
No.
If I hit close, will it die?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I'll just leave it then. I didn't know that.
Well, actually, it might not die, but let's not try it, hey? Let's try that on a test recording at some point, because, we'll just try that later.
Yep, you can do it.
I think you want to move that down and sort of in line with your chin, Grace, because your nose is sort of going...
Oh, okay,
you're windstorming.
All right.
That's better.
That should be better.
Yeah, that's great.
Awesome. Cool. All right, so now that we've got administrative, does anyone else have any other administrative questions about labs or notes or anything like that? It looks like everybody has gotten all of their assignments in, I believe. That is here. So fantastic, guys. Good start. Any other administrative questions?
I was just going to say before we get a question that you don't actually have to have the labs finished until we have finished the lecture of chapter, whatever it is you're doing, because often we'll answer a lot of the questions that you would need for the lab. So if you felt a bit sort of left out because you didn't think you had all the answers to do those labs, we do cover a lot of the stuff in lecture. Certainly starting them as soon as you want and getting 98% of them done is good, but sometimes we actually do answer bits and pieces in the actual lecture itself.
I will actually assign labs as we get through the sections that they pertain to. So you won't... have to work. Once we've covered something, I'll tell you which labs you'll need to do. So, and that brings us to the grading scheme. If anyone has any questions before we go into the grading scheme that we've just come up with, or a bunch of us brainstormed about last week, let me know. We'll take care of the administrative stuff first. Cool. Okay. This is the grading scheme for this term. As you all know, your labs are worth 30% of your grade. As you do each module of labs, no matter what, you'll get a point for that module once you have completed all of the labs. Now, here's where it's different from last term. Your other point you will earn for getting your labs in on time. So you will get a point for each module's labs that you get in on time. This means that you will complete the tasks that I assign each week and send in your work before the next lecture is to be actually given. I'll put out this task list. I'll tell you what it is on lecture. There will be no doubt as to what you will have to do every week. If you need more time on something, you just need to write me an email and say, I need another week on this. We don't even need an explanation for you the first week that you need your time. If you need more time after that, if you haven't gotten the list of tasks done within 2 weeks, you need to explain to us why this is. This is just basically to keep you guys accountable and make sure we know what's happening with you. Okay.
No, she's not popping. It's just the fact that there's breath in the microphone. She's not actually clipping. It's just sort of a...
It out.
That's her breath hitting the microphone.
Sorry.
She's using a crummy $9 headset because she left the other one at home by accident. And totally I'm using a crummier headset, so there's not much we can do about it. Sorry, guys.
It's trying to see if one of these has a pop sock on it I can steal, but I don't see any.
No, you're right now, Grace.
Headsets. Okay.
We'll just have to deal, guys. I mean, I know there is a bit of a... But if you saw their Skype headsets, you'd be surprised she's even transmitting.
Yeah, they're pieces of junk, and we bought like 10 of them. Okay.
You were saying that if they'd requested extra time, they would need to explain themselves to you?
Yep, after 2 weeks. You get 1 week, you know, it just if you write me an email and say, look, I need another week. I don't even want an explanation from you. I don't care. That's on you. But after that, we do need an explanation from you, taking more than 2 weeks to complete a specific set of tasks. If it is just I am lazy, you're not getting that point. If you have a good reason, then you definitely can get the point and we'll give you as much time as you need to complete them. But it's got to be a good reason.
Can I just make one point, though, to people? Nowhere on your certificate are any of the marks shown. So if you were a lazy person and lost the 15 marks because you were lazy, that is not going to show up on your certificate. The certificate is purely a pass-fail thing. It just affects the marks in the grade book. So if you pass and you succeed in passing, your certificate says, you passed, you're done, you do this, this, and this. And that's very important to keep in mind that there are no marks printed on the actual certificates themselves.
You will have a lot more pressure on your final and on your tests if you don't get these 15 marks, though. Because you'll have to work a lot harder to pass.
And you learn stuff.
You mentioned in our lecture, and I wanted to know, does that apply to us as well?
No,
it doesn't.
She won't do that for your class.
She won't do it.
So, no, you're exempt, but we are. Because what happens...
From which part?
And I'll be...
grading.
Grading.
She's not doing this grading
15
scheme.
Marks.
This is not for you. If you were in Kylie's class, this does not apply.
The reality is that we have found that when people study in distance, we've got two types of students. One type that gets in and does the labs and gets it done on time, and another type that basically life gets in the way and the labs never get done, and then by the time they get around to doing the labs, it's too late and the labs never get done. So we're trying to provide in this class a little bit of incentive to stay on track and keep motivated and keep going through the course, because procrastination is your worst enemy. We have returning students, I won't point them out, who will tell you how procrastination stopped them from doing their labs. If you can't do the lab because you don't know the information, or you can't do the lab because you're confused, get in touch with one of the instructors. That's what we're all here for.
We'll help you. We have study group to help you. If you have problems, we will make sure that you get these things done if you talk to us. And we can give you more time and all of this if you're working with us. It's basically an accountability thing for you guys, so that we know where you are, you know where you are, and you don't disappear off the face of the earth.
I kid you not, I had an Indian class who completed 60% of the labs on the last day. And this was a course that once that day had finished, Cisco wasn't offering that course again, so I couldn't even create another class. They were up till midnight at the academy completing those labs on the last day. Talk about cutting it fine, fellas.
I think the labs are kind of important because for me, personally, because they kind of give you a handle on the material.
They're critical.
And they're fun. A lot of them are so much
they
fun
can
to
be,
do.
Yeah.
You'll look at this and be like, wow, I never knew I could do that.
One of them actually helped me learn some troubleshooting techniques for my iPod that I had just recently got. It's like, find troubleshooting resources. iPod,
yeah.
iPod, iPod. Here.
Okay, so does the grading scheme make sense to anyone, and does anyone think it's unfair? Or have any ideas that would make it better to change it, because this is an experiment. The way we're doing this course this year is a completely new experimental way of doing things.
Yeah, thanks for that. We did actually do a lot of discussion and stuff to make sure that nobody would be disadvantaged by the system. And that's why you can have, and that 1 week that you get, that extra week, that is, as far as I'm aware, that is per module. So you can always ask for one extra week for each module's worth of work, no problem, without an explanation. But it's if you want more than that week per module, you then have to give us a reason or forfeit that mark. Now, the other thing you've got to understand is that I have to look at exactly how the grade weightings work, but it isn't that many marks that you lose for being late, so it's not going to, you know, hugely adversely affect you.
It can if you're bad at tests. You will notice it, and you'll be able to see in your gradebook that you didn't get those marks. But other than that, really, yeah.
Now, Grace has also told you guys that you get more than one shot at a chapter test.
And more than one shot at a lab. And you don't have to have the labs right the first time and right in that time period. I just want your first go at it.
And you'll get help. You'll get responses that tell you, hey, you know, here's how you can fix it if you did get stuff wrong. That was one thing I was very happy with when I took the class as a student, because there's nothing more frustrating than being in a class and just hearing, nope, you just really, you know, did really badly at that, and then you don't know why. So, yeah, we don't do that. We want to make sure you know
why. So everybody thinks that's fair.
Works for me. Sounds great.
Sounds good.
Sounds good.
Yep.
I'm glad it's that way or I'd never get it done.
Hey. Super. Cool. I just want to make sure that everybody thinks it's fair so that nobody feels they're disadvantaged. It's a new thing, and I just want to make sure that it is all good with
everyone. Now, please also understand that people are available to you on Skype. The mailing lists are available to you. People are available to you via email. It's not as if you're going to miss out on instructor resources. There are instructors in your time zone. There are instructors in our time zone. It's not as if study group is the only resource. It's just an extra one than what we usually have. So please understand that there is a network of people here to help you, primarily Grace and Sean if you're in this class, although I am available to answer questions and often do, primarily Kylie if you're in the other class. But we will all band together and help you. That's what they pay. Well, they pay me. They don't pay anyone else. But that's what the instructors are here for. They're here to help you. We are here to guide you down the path of knowledge. That's the theory, anyway. And I'd just like to say a big well done for getting Grace to setting up all the students. I think she's done an excellent job. And a lot of people have had their audios and all sorts of things set up. And I think she's done a ripper job at that. I'd just like to put that out there.
Yay!
Yay, great.
Agree.
Thank you, guys. Thanks. I love to do it. It's good, and I'm glad that everybody's set and ready to go. All right. So with that out of the way, let's start our lecture. We'll come back to class names in a little while, possibly because of time, and not get any lecturing done, and that wouldn't be so cool. All right. So we've talked about your goals last week of why you took the course. So now I have some goals for everyone in the class. I want you to acquire the knowledge and confidence to be the best computer technician you can be. We need to remember that blindness is not a barrier to being excellent computer technicians. This class is not the be-all and end-all as a computer technician. You'll always be learning about new hardware and software, so this is not the only class, and you will not learn everything there ever is to know about computers from this course. This is a good foundation for you guys. Okay, number two, I want to make learning enjoyable. Remember, this is your class, which means three things. Firstly, bring any relevant questions or discussions to class with you. No question is a stupid question, and if you don't ask it, you'll never know the answer. If you have a question, chances are that others do too, and don't actually realize it. I'm sure everybody has had the experience of someone else asking a really good question that you've never even thought about asking. So even if you think it's silly, other people might realize that they want to know the answer too. And we've got shy people in class who don't talk, and if you don't ask the question, they won't.
Okay, there is a key up, key people, and that is the one that allows you to talk. Use it, please.
In this class, we really would like you to talk.
It's really difficult as a lecturer if you've just got dead silence and you go, everybody get that? And you get like six people type yes into chat and that's the only thing you see all lecture. And then after lecture, you go outside and eat a 200 gram chocolate bar because, gee, that was hard work, okay? So
exactly.
Go ahead.
I just thought that was funny.
Yeah, fair enough.
All right. another thing. Number two, if you want to do something different in lecture or have an idea for a class activity, give Sean or I a Skype or an email. We can't guarantee it will happen, but it will definitely be considered, and we guarantee that if it doesn't happen, we'll at least give you a reason why it can't happen. Okay, three.
We could do a real-time test of network packets and things by playing Top Speed.
Oh, we could, and we will.
That'll be Chapter 8, Aiden. Aiden.
Yeah. All right. And as students from last year know, we try to have a good time in this class. We do joke around, and we tend to be incredibly honest. If something that we say bothers you, please let us know. We want this to be a safe environment for everybody involved, but we do try and have a really good time, and we will do things.
If you have a problem, and the policies will be coming out in the next week or so, but if you have a problem, please raise it with us first, because we might actually be able to solve that problem. And then if you can't raise it with us, you can certainly take it up higher levels of authority and get something done about it. But seriously, we try to resolve any of the problems that are brought to our attention. It's just how we operate.
Is there somewhere where the email addresses are all listed at once without having to sort of go searching through the discuss list?
Yeah.
And
try that student resources page. It's also on the student resources page. You've got the CAVI instructor's email address there, and you've also got the information down the bottom on how to... Yep, down at the bottom of the student resources page, it's all written there. It's also listed in the new information for students, and there's information in the courses overview document. It's actually in about four different places, and it's all written out.
If you want instructor emails, they are on the schedule page.
No, I meant a list of everybody in the class in case you wanted people with that.
No,
we don't do that.
The
privacy concern, I'm afraid, there. We don't hand out other people's email addresses. If you post to a mailing list, your email address is out there because you posted to the email list. And I am going to make those archives private in the next week or so. But we don't hand out other people's email addresses. It's up to students themselves to share their email addresses. The easiest way to get that information back, if students are interested in us collating a list and want to share that list around, then we could certainly work on that. But the list archives will give you all of those messages, and it's quite easy to pull the last month's archives and get them that way. I realise it's not the best way, but some people are very sensitive about their privacy and who sees their email address and stuff. So we've got to be careful of that.
And if you want to hook up with somebody...
I would have thought that the discussion list would be the way to sort of keep in touch with each other anyway.
Well, some people want to work in groups of twos or threes on labs and want a smaller group and just want to get in touch with a few students. That's really... They don't want to clog up the list. So, yeah, that's what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just as an example, I think we all had just a few too many posts on the blind driving challenge. It was very, very interesting.
Just a bit.
But after
tedious explanations of fly-by-wire.
Oh, no, that's okay. Generally speaking, it was interesting, but what you find is that if you see 10 or 15 messages on a topic, and these ones were fairly interesting, yours were fairly good. The problems I had were the people who were writing back and sort of going, yeah, that looks really cool, I wonder how it's going to shape up, send, and they left all the quoted text in the bottom. It's just like, seriously, some people have a very low threshold to email in their inbox, and we don't want people leaving the discuss list because they see too many messages on the topic. But it's just a common sense thing, and I think that was an interesting topic, and the messages on it were fairly interesting, but there were a few people that put three lines at the top, hit send, and that wasn't so cool.
And then put all sorts of quoted stuff in, and it was really hard to read. Not you.
The only other thing about a discussion list too is that people have to be aware of ensuring that if they change the topic, that they change the subject.
Oh, you don't get you get in very much trouble if you do that on this list.
Yeah, I think I would like to see the subject change when the topic changes wherever possible.
because I think that makes it easy to follow the threads in the archive. So if you are going to change and talk about something else, if you could change the topic, that would be really good. But unfortunately, that's just a guidelines thing that we'd like to see happen. We can't exactly enforce it. If you have a problem with the list, if you have a problem with the list management, you primarily come to me because I'm the one who administers them, and I will deal with any issues and things that come up. They will transition to the QCAT servers soon, but at the moment they run on my home server, so I'm list administrator. If you've got a problem, feel free to bring it up with me. Not necessarily in lecture, of course, but and I will do my best to sort it out.
What did you have to say?
Another good way, I was just saying that the way that conversations progress on lists, that can be sometimes difficult, that they have to spot it early. Another way to keep in touch with people, if you have it, is be Twitter, because if the beauty is if two people follow each other, it's no drain on anyone's bandwidth, and you can send direct messages to get more personal information.
And if you really want to get hold of somebody, talk to me or Sean, and we'll talk to them and see if they want to give you their contact.
You're cutting out a little bit there, Grace.
Yeah, personally, if anyone wants to get together and work on labs or whatever, my email address is usually at the bottom of every message, so feel free to write to me, guys.
And who is that again?
That was Maria.
Same
goes for Brad.
Yep.
Okay.
The other thing, guys, is down the bottom of every message to the discuss list, down the bottom of every single message is a link to the archives. I'm not saying you have to use the archives, but if you click on them once, you'd be surprised what a wealth of information is there. And those archives are there for a reason, so that you can track back and see what other people have said and get access to these things. So just keep in mind, I keep getting asked, where are the links to the archives? Well, you know what? It's in the headers of every message, and it's now down the bottom of every message that goes to announce and discuss.
So you can search them, like, for a phrase
not
and
really.
Find out?
Not yet. I have to figure out how to get archive search working. I think that involves me and a copy of, what's that silly thing? There's a little search engine I've got to install. You can look through the subject lines, though, which is a good way to see what sort of things are, and it will give you a month-by-month view, and you can also pull 1 month's worth of messages down into a text file and search it in whatever text editor you want. It's not perfect, but until I get the search functionality operational, I need to figure out how to get that search to work with Mailman.
That's cool about the month of text files.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that today, actually.
Okay, one other quick thing.
I actually run...
Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, I administer several lists with Mailman for ham radio stuff, but I haven't seen where they have implemented the search yet, so I don't know if there's a search engine that you can implement.
There are a couple of them that do. Okay, so... The other thing is, I know most of your voices, and I will respond to you. But if we can, for the first couple weeks, say who we are before we're speaking, nobody else knows who you are. So. That would be awesome.
Okay. Now, due to the magic of Twitter, I have just got a message that says that I've now got some assistance with getting that search functionality working. I'm not going to dob the person in. Thank you. I will take you up on that. But there's the power of Twitter, guys. So if you've got Twitter and you've got Quitter or one of the Max clients such as Syrinx or Ufakaru, that's probably the best way to pronounce that one, you may want to get on.
Nobody actually knows.
Yeah.
We're Twitterific.
You can tweet at us.
We can say that one.
We can say Twitterific. But yeah, the other one that I just said, the one that starts with you, that actually now has multiple account support, and there's one of our ex-students that loves it to bits. So if you are on a Mac, you may want to take a look at it. Then again, you might not want to. I don't know. I've never used them.
Any other questions before we get into this lecture thing that we're supposed to actually have today? Usually not this bad, seriously. But I want to get all that administrative junk taken care of.
The first
lecture is
always
that,
a
guys.
Bit interesting.
All right, so today I saw something really interesting. I believe it was in 1948. The definition of computer was actually a person that does mathematical calculations or something like that. It's changed quite a bit now. We all are sitting in front of computers, and it isn't a person, is it? So that is really, I found really interesting and wanted to share with you guys. Okay.
Now, does anybody remember the quote from Bill Gates from 1986 that said, 640K of RAM is more than anyone will ever need?
That's pretty funny.
Okay. Information technology.
Broke down in tears today because an old system I had had 256 megs of RAM, and I tried to do some work on it, and that was fun.
Poor thing. Okay. We are all here to learn about information technology. Information technology, or IT for short, is the design, development, implementation, support, and management of computer hardware and software applications. This course focuses on desktop and laptop computers. We're also going to talk about printers and scanners, portable devices, networks, security, and customer service. That sounds like a lot. And it really isn't that bad. If you pay attention to the lectures and read your notes, it's not going to be so bad. A lot of people are scared by this first chapter, but if you really listen and really pay attention to what I say, I'm going to give you just about every answer for the test, and I'm basically going to tell you that I'm giving you most of the answers for the test when they come up. So if you really pay attention, you can get 100% on this test, and I know somebody who did it. It wasn't me. So it's not really that scary. The other second lab 1.4.7 people seem to be very afraid of. And starting tomorrow and the next study session, we are going to walk ourselves through that lab. So there is no need to be afraid of this chapter. We can all get through this, and it's not going to be so bad.
The other thing I was going to say about 1.4.7 is building computers is like building cars. There are certain rules and stuff for building cars. Generally, you don't put Ford parts in a Holden or Toyota parts in a Ford. You generally keep the parts the same across the thing, and we'll talk about that in study group. I'm sorry, if you want me to say Nissan instead of Holden or some other car, don't put the wrong parts for the wrong car, but you get the idea. Yeah, if you don't know much about cars, I'm sorry. Just grew up around lots of cars that didn't go, which is probably why I now fix computers.
It's like Legos, guys.
Yeah, this we don't is put Sean. Have you seen some of the crazy stuff you can do? If you want to, I used to do stuff like that, but that's just me.
Fair enough.
I used to just stick all kinds of different things together and see what it looked like. But if you're going by the book, yeah, you don't do that.
Once you finish this course, you may wish to seek additional industry certifications to increase your opportunities in the job market. If you are going for A+, I need to know when you figure that out, because I will have some additional test-taking stuff for you guys to do. So drop me an email if that's what you think you're going to do, and you will have a few more tests with less time. As practice. They won't count against your grade or anything, but you'll get the opportunity to sit those tests to prepare you for the A+.
Also, if you're doing A+, it would probably be advantageous to let us know, because in certain circumstances we may be able to assist you to advocate with Pearson VUE or the people who do those particular exams.
And you'll just be held to a whole lot higher standard of, test taking. So, yeah, let us know. Go ahead.
This is Brad. I was just going to say, is the level of difficulty from, this course's test to the A+, are we talking much harder or a little bit?
It's all multiple choice. It's all multiple choice for both of these. There's no written. And if you study, and if you, the best thing I can tell you about the A+ is learn your terminology, learn your acronyms, and understand as much as you can about what things look like. You'll have plenty of diagrams in that test, and your reader might be the cleaning lady. So it's important that you learn to ask the right questions when faced with diagrams.
Just as long as I don't have to memorize all those sockets and all that stuff.
You do.
Oh, yeah. Yep. You're going there.
All right. Okay.
It's that kind of stuff.
Only, only anything since the socket socket 478. We don't go back past the socket 478. So you don't need to remember socket 7, socket 6, socket 5. You don't need to remember socket A or slot A. We don't go back that far.
I don't even think they go back to the 478. The most I think you want to know about the 775s and.
And the 939 and the 13. Yeah. So it's only the new sockets. So there's only.
It's only a few sockets that you really need to know about.
All right, because my sockets that I know are like 3/8, half inch, quarter inch drive, that kind of thing.
Oh, no, I was talking about CPU sockets.
Oh, you have to know all the slots. Yeah. You have to know where everything goes. Absolutely.
Yeah, no, I was just making a joke. I'm just, yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's just the computer socket is just a little bit different, so that's something you just got to commit to memory, and so that's fine.
Yeah, a lot of this stuff in Chapter 1 is a lot of things you'll need to remember, and you can always go back and look at this, and we'll review everything as we go through the course, but this is the foundation. This is the stuff that you want to know, and I will point out things that you definitely don't need to know and that they just go over for kicks. As we go along. So there are things that you definitely don't need to really know too terribly much about for this course. And I'll point them out as well.
Cool thing.
You are guaranteed some accommodations when you do the A+ exam. Any reasonable accommodations, you have to fill out a form, but you should get extra time and you should get a reader. That is basically the reasonable accommodations that you should get if you're taking a CompTIA exam. And this is worldwide because CompTIA is an international organization.
The key thing is you will get a reader and you will get somebody to drive the computer for you. You will not be driving the computer yourself. Please understand this when you do the CompTIA exams, that somebody is going to drive the computer for you. They won't let you bring your own computers and stuff into the exam.
You don't get a screen reader. This is a system that probably doesn't even run Windows, guys. It's just a test-taking box with a mouse.
Wow.
Well, that's helpful to know, though, because... Yeah, that's helpful to know, though, so you're not trying to deal with, you know, navigation issues on something that's strange when you're trying to take a test. With, you know, that's just good to know.
Generally, the reader will not be computer literate. In fact, I'll try and find somebody who's as not computer literate as possible because the reader can't provide you with any assistance in the exam. So they may not actually get the cleaning lady, but they're not going to get somebody who knows the computers really well either unless they can help it, because that would be an unfair advantage.
And this the system that you use is unbelievably easy to navigate. I mean, it's designed for anyone to be able to actually use the system. So you're not going to have problems with that person actually being able to navigate your system, or at least you shouldn't, because it's made to be very easy.
Can I just say, 10 years ago, I was technically useless. I actually took the A+ exam 10 years ago. The reason I'm doing this again is to upgrade and get information. And when I started out, I thought, I will never do this. And you know, when that exam came along and that guy was reading that stuff, it's almost a case of when you hear the multiple choices, you go, oh, that's wrong. Oh, that's wrong. Oh, that's the right one. Oh, the rest of them are wrong. Okay, goodbye. And I hate to brag, but for somebody who started out totally confused, I actually got 90-something on each of the exams, so it turns out not to be that hard.
Yeah, that's good to know. See, so there you go.
Absolutely. So you guys have a pretty good shot at this. And you just need to write me if you're actually serious about doing A+, and we will make sure that you are ready as best we can.
If you're not doing
I guess I don't really need to do it again.
No, you're lifetime certified, so no.
So this is just a refresher. So no, I don't need to do the A+ since I already have a card. So.
All right, fair enough. So this course can prepare you for 2 industry certifications. The Computing Technology Industry Association, or CompTIA for short, develops the A+ certification. And this shows that you are a qualified hardware and software technician and is a great start to building a solid career in IT. You need to pass 2 exams to become certified, the A+ Essentials and the A+ Practical Application. A-plus fundamentals tests for fundamentals of computer technology, networking, and security, as well as the soft skills for computer technicians. Your practical is a more hands-on scenarios, which tests your troubleshooting skills. So it's basically a bunch of summaries, and what would you do if this happened? And what is the best solution to this type of thing? The other one is the EUCIP, which is a European IT certification. Most of us are working towards A+, so we're not even going to go into this. It's not in your test. If you care, look at your notes. Okay, any questions on certifications before we go into the heart of the computer systems? Cool. All right. We're going to talk about computer systems. A computer system includes both hardware and software. I'm sure we know this, or we wouldn't be in this class. Today, we will be focusing on the hardware, yes, that makes up a PC. So, guys, let's quickly name some hardware, just so that we make sure that we know what hardware is. Go.
Hot drive, monitor.
Absolutely.
Motherboard.
RAM.
Inkhead.
ROM.
I'm just kidding.
Adapter cards.
The ROM is, yep, adapter cards.
Monitor.
Okay, so we all know... The case? Absolutely. So we all... Yep. It can be a daughter board. Didn't use too many of those.
Actually, technically, the PC industry tell us, the politically correct industry, that is, tell us that they are actually system boards and sub-boards. Apparently, I was told a few years back. We will continue to use the term mother and daughter boards, but apparently the non-gender-specific say that they are system boards and sub-boards. So, go figure.
Well,
the stream would like that better. It calls them mother boards.
What do they call male and female? Oh, never mind.
I actually had a question on that one year. There was one of our students that went, "Please, sir, what is the difference between male and female connectors? I've never seen my boss split his side so hard. He's just like, oh, I've got to see him get out of this." I did too.
And you said...
Yeah, what did you
say?
I
said that if you think about the gender of a person and you think about the attributes of that particular person, that is the same as the attributes of the specific connectors. And they got
oh
the message.
God.
Wow. What a clever little fellow.
Oh, fantastic.
I was once in a class where a student didn't know what a castrati was, and anybody who knows will understand that the professor had to draw the guy a picture.
Oh, no! Okay.
This was Amanda, sorry.
Yep, that's okay. Wow.
And if you don't know what a castrati is, Wikipedia is your friend, okay?
Wikipedia.
Moving on.
Sure.
Yeah, Wikipedia. It's not a computer part.
What is?
No.
I could make another comment.
A castrati is a... this is Aiden. A castrati is a doctored singer.
Race
again,
car.
Wikipedia.
Yeah, go to Wikipedia if you're not sure. Anyway.
A person that should sound like a male who no longer can.
Yes, basically.
Moving right on.
Oh.
Yeah. Anyway. Let's quickly...
They weren't using correct technique in their O&M lesson.
Yes, they weren't. That's exactly what it is. Alright, so let's quickly name some software, guys. Well, let's talk about some software programs. What do we have for software?
Operating system.
Windows 7.
Applications. Microsoft Word.
Office.
This is
PC
software?
Email.
Mail.
The good old days.
Voice.
Mac-mail.
Ventrol.
Absolutely.
JAWS, just
JAWS, kidding. NVDA,
Window
Skype,
Eyes.
Yep.
The Windows Error Reporting System.
Yeah, that's a piece of software we'd rather
actually, say. Actually, we heard from one of our technician friends who actually turns off that error reporting because he said machines run a lot faster without it. And since when has Microsoft ever given you a sensible diagnostic when it says send? It
I got one
off.
Once.
Yeah, I did too, once.
I asked once. Yeah, fair enough.
How do we turn it off?
We'll cover that in the labs at some point, yeah.
Yeah. Yep, that's module 5. We'll play with that. What'd you say? I'm
actually 5 or 12 or both.
Brings you to a search page.
I actually had to...
It's about as helpful as it gets.
Yeah. Okay, you actually test what now?
I had to do testing to speed up a little laptop for the Seeing with Sound, and one of the things we found, if we did turn off the error testing, it shaved off a few minutes of boot time.
That is cool.
Sure does.
Wow. I want to talk to you about trimming my little netbook's power usage and cutting non-essential services to make it a voice machine, or a Seeing with Sound machine at some point, Pat.
I think what I'm going to do, just before we get sidetracked, is I'm going to have a talk to Pranav after his lecture, and anybody else who wants to come in. Would anybody here be interested in another Seeing with Sound demo on Team Talk in a few weeks' time?
Yes.
With stereo and everything? Because I think we've got enough intellectual stuff to have a look at that.
Cool.
And, if you
I don't
want
even know
to
what
be,
it is.
Oh, you
Not
will.
Oh, you will.
It's not just Pranav. If you want to be involved, Pat, you're more than welcome. Collaborative effort, but I think we could do a really good demo on Team Talk and show these guys what it is in a few weeks' time if that fits in with everyone. I think you guys would enjoy it a lot.
Yeah, this is Brian.
I'll make time.
I did a presentation back a while back with Pranav. I think he mentioned it. I actually did pull the presentation he did. So if we could do Team Talk and actually do stereo, I do think that would help out significantly from his first presentation.
It's a thing that changes images into sounds. So he wants to do a demonstration of it on Team Talk, which is another voice chat platform that will allow us to do it in stereo so we can really hear what it is.
Is it sort of like those funny glasses that they had that telesensory? Oh, okay.
Well,
it changes images into sound.
Yeah,
it changes images into sound, which activates the visual cortex of your mind, and you begin to understand the world around you in a dimensional field instead of the flat field we feel as blind people.
So does that mean I can go ride
Otherwise
a bike
you
down
see,
Young Street or something?
Not
Maybe.
Quite.
Actually, I have rode a bike using the glasses, and currently the hardware and the software is not fast enough.
Ah, fair enough. Okay. On to the rest of this. We've got to talk about the computer case. Now, the computer case provides protection and support for the internal components of the computer. Now, if we were to think about it, does anyone have any ideas of what the case might provide protection from?
Physical
dust.
Damage, static
heat.
Electricity, dust. Yeah.
Dust.
Yeah.
Heat.
Static.
Fingers.
Oh, yes.
Dog hair.
There is another one. There is another one that people have missed so far.
Shorting out.
Grounds the components, doesn't it?
Yeah. Also,
getting very irritated
protects
with their computers and wanting to break them.
It's also to protect against electromagnetic interference. The actual metal case acts as a Faraday cage, so you can still watch the Super Bowl and use your computer.
Okay, the cases also provide a cool environment for computer components because they would overheat if they didn't have a case on. Case fans are used to cycle air through the computer. Warm air is pushed away from the components and out vents in the case, and some of them have intakes, and it will suck in cool air. This is why it is so important never to block vents and to keep them free of dust, because if it can't suck in air or pull out air, it's going to get hot, overheat, and you're in trouble. Okay,
this is why you shouldn't use your laptop on your bed, see Chapter 6.
Yeah,
this is Brian Shaw. I got a point I want to make real quick.
Okay, let's have it.
About blocking the fans and all. I have actually worked on cases that were so full of cat hair and dust, the fans couldn't even move. So it took a bunch of compressed air, and it took a bunch of compressed air and a little computer vacuum to even vacuum off the motherboard and the RAM and the hard drives and all, in order for this thing to actually get working again.
There's another thing that a friend of mine does. He actually charges a $50 smoker tax, because if somebody smokes in front of their computer and it's full of all that tar and stuff from smoking, he's just like, no, that'll be an extra $50 to clean that out. Don't smoke in front of your computer, because you'd be surprised how many computers get killed by being smoked in front of.
Oh, yeah, all the gunk gets into the vents, and it's disgusting.
I have a computer right now that runs a filter. It's like looks like cloth sitting in front of the vents that act like a dust filter to it.
You can get those on eBay for all the different size fans, the 60, 80, 100, 120, 140mm fans. You can actually buy the filters on eBay, filters and grills. Very handy if you're in a dusty environment and stuff. So certainly worth a look.
Well, they just sit over your fan or something.
Yeah, they screw on.
Okay. We're going to talk about choosing a case. Now, this is the point at which we start building the computer from the ground up. The first thing we want to choose is our case. And we want to choose a case that is easy to open, where you can get your hands in and get at all of the components, and it's not cramped. So you want to have plenty of room to work in there. If you have no space requirements. If you need a slim profile, then that's more important, but don't expect to actually be able to get your hands in there and work on the case easily. Your first case, you want to be a nice big case that you can work in. And for me, I always buy computers with really nice cases that I can get my hands in easily and take apart easily.
Some people believe that a computer isn't yours until you've bled into it. I would like to sort of say that that is not a cool thing to do, and it's certainly not a good safety thing to do. If you can slice your hands open on the edge of that case, you probably want to put tape over the sharp bits, because that's no fun for anybody. Few more dollars in the case, and with the rounded edges and things, will save you a lot of finger damage and other things. So a little bit more money into that case is always a good thing. And
don't buy the cheapest one. Really, really don't. I've done that once. I will never do it again because it was the most put together, and that case just added, an hour or two to my life that I will never get back. And if I would have just spent the extra $20, I could have gotten something nice. So do spend that extra money. You get what you pay for in cases.
Some of the cases I've seen, they look as thin as foil.
You don't want that. Because that is going to have lots of heat problems. And
apart from that, it's so thin that it actually just you can bend the metal by just just pressing on it.
Eek.
Oh yeah, they're the ones you sort of press on the side like a boom, 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 boom. And you go, now it shouldn't be doing that.
Now this actually even bent.
And the problem is when they don't bend back, that's when you get a little bit concerned.
You're not getting the side on or off of that thing once you bend it.
The other thing I'd say to people...
Yeah, that's absolute junk.
Cases,
I mean, that's about the cheapest one here.
The other thing I would say for time-saving techniques, and this is not in our notes, but if you've got a case that'll take thumb screws or that can take thumb screws, put the money in and buy yourself, 10, 20 thumb screws, because I'll save you a lot of time pulling it apart and putting it back together if you can take the screws out with your fingers rather than using a screwdriver if you're in a situation where you can do that. So thumb screws, definitely for
very
the
good.
Win.
Yep, they're twisty, they're big screws that you can just grab with your fingers and twist out.
Are they kind of like
clamshell cases?
Are they like what, Sean?
Clamshell cases. Sorry, what were you asking about, Sean?
Are the screws you're talking about kind of like what's on the end of the serial cables and stuff?
No.
Are they kind of like that?
They've sort of got a wider head, and they're usually made of metal, and they're same diameter as sort of your hard disk screws and stuff, maximum mounting depth, 1/4 inch, and you screw them in with your fingers. They've actually got a place in the top of them for a screwdriver to go in, either Phillips or slotted, and then they've actually got grippy things for your fingers to grip on around the outside, but they're usually made of metal.
Yeah, okay.
You can usually find them
called
toolist
cases.
It's normally
ones with a node sort of edge.
Now, the toolist cases can be the hardest ones to actually pull apart. Those toolist ones can be really, really difficult. It's like a puzzle. And, it can be really hard. Once you figure it out, you're all good. But honestly, it is ridiculous. What do
you
want to do about this Windows
7 exam? No, I've had you must be talking about
stopped.
That bracket
go
inside.
Go ahead and put it up and have him log in as Ian.
I've actually stopped buying toolless cases for exactly that reason.
No, okay, have
a look.
It's
too much trouble. I mean, it's neat to sort of open stuff without tools, but...
If you know exactly how to do it.
It takes me 15 minutes to change an adapter card because you have to figure out what little levers and widgets. And I've also found that sometimes after you've done it a few times, they don't always fit right again. And unlike screws, you don't have any leverage.
Yeah. I almost prefer the cases that I can unscrew, because at least I can find the big old screws and know exactly what to do with them. Okay, so...
Yeah, he's usually
he usually is a little bit low. That's okay.
I'll fix it.
Okay.
Okay, so if you take nothing else out of this chapter, this concept here is probably the most important concept for the entire chapter, right here. You need to select a case that fits both your motherboard and power supply. These three items, the case, the power supply, and your motherboard, are called the computer's form factor. These things must be the right shape, and they must all fit together. That is the form factor. That is the base. That is the start of your building.
It's in your test, it's in your test, it's in your test.
And it is the basis of 1.4.7. Yeah, this is the basis of 1.4.7. If you understand this, then if you understand the form factor you need and all of this, that is going to go a long way towards helping you with this lab. Okay. Grace. Okay. Yep. Okay. So now we're going to talk about... Does anyone have any questions about form factor? Anything they want to say about form factors?
Just as we're looking for parts and stuff later, I mean, the parts, when we look for those, they'll be identified as a certain form factor?
Your case, motherboard, and power supply will be.
Okay.
Are we looking at separate tower?
I think we just need to point out there are different form factors.
Yes. We will go there in a minute. You will mainly be working with the one you're doing is an ATX. So when you look for, they give you a case and power board or and motherboard. When you look for a power supply, you're going to want an ATX power supply.
Gotcha.
What did you say, Vanessa?
I was just going to say, we're looking at buying a tower without a power supply, separate, or...?
Yeah, we are. Because this tower, in this lab scenario, you have a case, and you have a motherboard, and you have to fill in the rest. And I think they give you a hard drive, too, so you don't have to do the hard drive.
No, that's okay, so you can actually buy towers with a power supply.
Oh, you can. Yeah. You can.
But for the test, we will be looking at it separately.
Yes.
It's cheaper to get a case with the power supply.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And sometimes it's a good idea. The reason you might not is because that power supply might be a load. It might not be much of a power supply. And it might have very little actual power. I've got a story for you guys. I bought a computer from Zaz, which is our cheapy one-deal-a-day site. And we decided to put in a new hard drive, and the power supply decided it wasn't going to let me do that. And we found out that this particular computer had come with a 230-volt power supply, which we had just blown.
No, it was 65 watts.
Oh, was it? Was it 65?
It was 65 watts.
So
230 volts at 65 watts. It was a little tiny power supply. And it went... and the smoke poured out of it. And that was that.
Yeah.
Well, I've must have replaced about 5 or 6 power supplies already.
Yeah. We'll talk about why you might be replacing.
I'm currently running a 450 watt power supply now. So.
Fair enough. Okay, power supplies regulate the flow of electricity between the power outlet and your computer. So what do you guys think would happen if each component of your computer received 240 volts of AC power all the time? What would happen?
They would go poof like your power supply did. It's Maria.
Oh, they totally would.
Okay.
No problem.
And now, when we say 240 volts, please understand that we are in Australia, 220 to 250. Please replace 240 with 110 if you are in the States, and 50 hertz with 60 hertz. And if you get the switch wrong on the back of the power supply, bang!
We'll talk a little more about that in a minute. Okay, so lots of smoke and sparks, and your power supply, as in the words of one of our students, will be extra crispy. And so will all of your components. So these convert... power, AC power from your utility company into lower voltage DC current, depending on each component's needs. Each component gets a different current. A power supply can only account for slight fluctuations from a DC power source before it fails. One way to protect your computer is to use an uninterruptible power supply, or UPS. A UPS provides power
for
computer...
Didn't you mean AC source then?
Yeah, maybe I did. Yeah, it would be an AC source. But if there is any power fluctuations, if there is a fluctuation in your power grid and you do not have it protected, your computer might actually, if there's a spike or a surge, you may have a power supply go bang because it just won't be able to take that fluctuation. So to protect it, you use a UPS. Go ahead.
If you haven't smelt the got the smell of burning electronics, I have already blown one.
Oh yeah. And you know what? If you do have that problem, as we'll talk about in next week's lecture, it happens to everybody. Don't panic. It will happen to you in your lifetime as a computer technician, but that's okay. And we'll talk about safe ways to handle that next week. It will happen to you.
Actually, it'll probably be the week after next.
Yeah, probably.
Because we're going to have to be part.
Yeah, we will. Okay. This actually provides protection by using charging up a battery, and your computers actually run off that battery. And the battery is constantly charging while the computer is plugged in. If you lose power, this... uninterruptible power supply will give you enough time to shut down your computer so that nothing is harmed.
Some of them can actually tell your computer to shut itself down, can they?
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of them will shut the computer down. I actually lost 4 computers in my first 6 months in Perth, given the wonderful power supply that we used to have over here. And our house has got quite a few uninterruptible power supplies because I lost so many fewer computers once I had some surge protection and power protection sitting behind them.
And we just spent about $400 on some more uninterruptible power supplies. A power supply on a desktop is a heavy rectangular box, usually at the back of your computer. It has a hole in the back to insert the power cord, and usually a switch to shut off the power to the computer. When you're working on a computer, always unplug it and turn off the switch if you have one. If your BIOS is configured incorrectly and you do not flip the switch to off, your computer may boot up as soon as you plug in the power. And you may not want that.
Actually, I have a story about this very quickly. My brother
decided
that he was going to work on his computer, and he didn't bother turning off the override switch, and he's decided to resocket some RAM in and out of the system board, and there was still standby voltage from the power supply live on the board. He blew up the entire Super I/O chipset, lost the floppy controller, the serial port, the hard disk controller, and the secondary IDE controller, and had to buy himself a new board. This is really, really important, guys. When you have an ATX power supply, and we'll talk about AT and ATX later, there is standby current. Otherwise, things like Wake on LAN couldn't work. Otherwise, things like Wake on Ring and that sort of thing couldn't work because there wouldn't be standby voltage to run the low power electronics. Unplug that cord before you work on it, because if you make a mess inside that case, it can fry components on the board.
This is Sean. I'm not seeing many computers with power supply switches on the back anymore. And actually, for my computer, they said unplug it and also tap the power button to discharge stuff is the way that Dell has handled it in this particular computer. Is once you've unplugged it, they ask you to hit the power button once to... I don't know what exactly that does, but that's what they
just
told me.
It empties out the capacitors.
Just kind of like a phantom electricity is still in there, yeah.
This is Brian Shaw. Some of the power supplies I've actually had to replace, some of them do still have the switches, the on and off switches on them. Some do, some don't. It just depends on the power supply and the manufacturer.
Mm. While we're doing power supplies, Kerry, could you make your dying power supply fan noise thing that you usually do?
Oh, I can do that because Grace is off at the loo. Has anybody ever turned their computer on
and had it go. And then it quietens off and you forget about it.
Yes.
And then you turn it back on the next time and it does the same thing. And
mine,
you know,
does that.
Some people, they actually have this really good idea of turning on the computer and it goes. And they go bang on the top of the case to stop it. You just put a heck of a lot of shock on your primary hard disk. Well done. Yes, the technical thump is really going to fix that one. So don't. What you really have to do is either find the fan that's doing that and either replace the power supply, because in this course we do not open up power supplies. But if you are an advanced technician and you have some sewing machine oil, some blue tack, some sticky tape and a screwdriver, it is possible to re-oil a fan, but we certainly don't support it. And if you electrocute yourself doing it, we will not be held responsible, says one who has been doing this for years and hasn't quite electrocuted themselves yet. Because I unplugged the power cord first.
So it's a fan.
Yeah, it's a fan. It's the fan full of dust. What happens is the fans actually contain... the fans actually contain sleeve bearings, which is basically a shaft with a bearing that goes over the outside of the shaft, and the fan actually spins around on that shaft, and when the bearings lose lubrication... they actually start wobbling, and they actually don't pull as much air through as they should. Or don't put it in front of your mouth, because you're breathing at us.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
That's what I mean.
There you go.
The breath monster is here.
I hate this microphone. It's okay.
And then basically what happens is that when the fan gets full of dust, it starts making that noise as it wobbles backwards and forwards. And that's when you either get at it with some compressed air, or you get in and you replace the power supply or re-lubricate the fan. If you're doing case fans, I would strongly suggest that you buy case fans with ball bearings, because they will last longer, they're slightly noisier, but they run for years. The sleeve bearing fans generally are pretty crummy.
All right, I'm back now that I've untangled myself from tangling myself up in all of these cords, which Vanessa has just watched and was probably pretty amusing. All right. Yeah, she's cracking up over there.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
Okay. On the inside of the PC cable, PC, we've got all sorts of cables that run off the back of the power supply. It looks kind of like a little spider web if it isn't contained properly. This brings the power to the components. Each cable has a specialized connector for components it is meant to be attached to. Most connectors are keyed, which means they should only go in one way unless you really force them. This is a really good thing for blind people because it means that we will probably get things in the right way unless we are really forceful with it. And then, most connectors are also color-coded as well, which won't help most of us. We're now going to go over some of the different power connectors, and these are in your test, so pay attention here. A Molex connector is a 4-pin rectangular connector with 2 cutoff corners for keying. This provides power to IDE drives, optical and hard drives, and some fantastic, yes, and it has some high draw cooling fans it can do as well. Most of these you're going to be able to tell by touch, really. A Berg connector is a smaller 4-pin connector used to power floppy drives. It is also a small and rectangular connector. But it's smaller. Your main connector to the motherboard is like the big old power connector. This is 20 or 24 pins. It's slotted and rectangular with 2 rows of pins. It's very large. It's larger than any of the other connectors. A separate auxiliary AUX connector may also be needed to provide more power. These are small 4 or 8-pin connectors that are the same shape as the main one. The 4-pin connector ones are just this little boxy thing that goes right next to that main power connector. That question about the AUX is in your test. And I believe some Molex and Berg is as well.
And now, Jaws says O, so be careful.
Yeah, Jaws does say O, so have a look if you're confused. Older powers...
Or fix your custom dictionary. I'd really recommend that, guys.
Or you can do that.
Yeah, that too. I just kind of look. Older power supplies, and now this is not, I don't believe this on your test, but this is important to know as blind people, because this is not something we will want to mess with. You get someone else to do this. Older power supplies use two connectors called P8 and P9 to connect to the motherboard. P8 and P9 were unkeyed connectors. They could be installed backwards, potentially damaging the motherboard or power supply. The installation required the connectors to be lined up with the black wires together in the middle. So black on black.
Red to red, black to black, turn the switch and stand back.
So if you see one like this, you don't want to mess with it. Because, quite honestly, not keyed, not blindy friendly, and they're old anyway, so and I've never seen one. So don't worry too much about it. If it seems that a connector... Go ahead.
I was going to say, Grace, that I found you can use a color detector, and you can determine on the cables what color matches where on the motherboard, and you can also use the color detector to see the different colored ports on the outside of the cases.
Okay. I need to get a reliable enough color detector to actually do that, and I don't actually... Really, I do most... Go ahead.
Yeah, I've actually never found that the color detector did well on objects, materials perhaps, but walls and hard surfaces I found that they didn't do too well.
What color detector you lay do you your like item
on? I'll have to get the name of it. It's brand new. We just got it. And I laid my cables on a pure white paper so I could tell that away. And I also lined the ports with white all around them so that only the color of the port would show.
Okay.
You could post that, whatever that is, on the discussion list. Maybe people would be interested.
Absolutely, that'd be good.
Sure, sure. I'll get the name up.
I personally, relying on a color tester to do computer work would scare me, and I don't think I would feel very comfortable doing it at this point, because I've never seen a color detector work, but I'd sure give it a try and see, you know, on a non-essential box if the colors were at all right, and then maybe I'd think about it. She doesn't know.
Maybe an idea would be to match your cables and then have someone come back in and re-verify that they were correct.
Oh,
before,
yeah, absolutely. This would really unnerve me to actually do that. I don't know. Strange.
How then do you determine which end of the ID cable to use?
You don't have to. That's by feel. You have... most of the IDE cables will work either way. Some have different colored ends, but most of the time, you're usually okay if you plug in the one end to the to the motherboard, plug in a middle drive if you have one, or you know, master slave, and then plug in the other one to your main drive. So I don't usually. I mean, I've never had a problem yet doing it that way, and usually you're okay just to plug either end in.
I just found the high-speed cables gave me trouble.
Parallel ATAs any longer.
Yeah, no, SATAs are much, much better for that.
I've had a problem with them.
Yeah? What's your problem with SATAs?
There we are. I've actually had a problem with SATA cables, and this is something you've really got to be careful with, guys. I've done it a couple of times when I first got them. Do not put any downward pressure onto the SATA cable, because you'll snap the little retaining piece of plastic out of the top of the SATA connector, and it's gone. So don't put any downward pressure on the SATA cable if you press down on that cable, because it will actually snap the little piece of plastic out of the top of the cable. And then it just doesn't sit in the socket anywhere near as well after that.
That could be bad.
Absolutely.
Was that when you were attaching it to the motherboard?
Either or. Don't tip them down on either end, because you can actually break the little retaining piece of plastic out of the top of either end of the cable. And it's more dangerous if you do it on the system board, because if you actually bend it down and manage to bend the SATA connector, that's a new board. Let's not do that.
Do they go in better than the IDE cables then?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, much easier.
They're so much easier to use. SATA cabling is way, way, way easier, and you've only got two ends to deal with, and there's no jumper settings, and it's just so much better.
Oh, jumpers are... Oh.
We will explain what a jumper is later. It's not something that keeps you warm on a cold day, and it's not a kangaroo, but we will talk about it later.
Okay. If it doesn't fit, don't
also,
force it.
Power supplies...
Go ahead.
Also, power supplies here do not have floppy connectors any longer.
No, some of them don't. And this is probably the last curriculum that we will even be hearing about bird connectors in, because they are becoming very close to obsolete now.
Not many computers have floppy drives in them these days.
Yeah.
None of the machines sold here have them now.
You can get external floppy drives that hook in
to
the USB.
Oh, well, then you don't have to do it.
There you go. That was easy.
No, you probably didn't.
Is it the Windows 70?
Sorry, we had a volunteer here. Sweet. Okay. But someone was just checking exam for picture descriptions, and you guys don't have any, which is always happy times. All right. Okay, so if it doesn't fit, don't force it. Try running it, and then make sure that no pins are bent and nothing is obstructing the way. The connectors are made to fit snugly, so take your time and don't force anything. Okay. Alright. Ohm's Law. There are four basic electrical terms that you should be familiar with as a technician. This is not in your test, but you will have a lab and some more talk about this in Module 11. All right, so we've got volts. They're written as the letter V. This is the force that is needed to push electrons through a circuit. Volts is force. Power supplies provide several different voltages for the components in your PC. Current, represented by the letter I, is the amount of electrons that flow through a circuit. Volts is force, and I, current, is electrons. It is measured in amperes, or amps, written as the letter A. Your power supply provides different amperages for each unique voltage it puts out. Power, represented by the letter P, is the measurement of the current and the voltage flowing through the circuits. Power is measured in watts, written as the letter W, which is how we rate the computer power supplies. That's the most important one. The equation that goes along with these three units of measure is P equals I. So it is power equals voltage times current. This means that if you increase the voltage or the current, the power increases, and your power supply puts out more watts. We have one more term to talk about, and this is resistance, written as the letter R. As the amount of resistance that electrons encounter flowing through a circuit. In computer components, you really want very low resistance. This is measured in ohms. A good circuit in a computer has very low resistance, as I've said. Ohm's law states that voltage is equal to the current multiplied by the resistance. This is written as V equals IR. Power supplies usually provide 250 to 650 watts and can go much higher for very power-hungry machines. You're not really going to need much more than 650 watts, really. For choosing a power supply for the lab, I'd go anywhere between 400 and 600 watts of power. Really?
Unless you're running a server.
Yes, unless you're running a server. But we're not building a server, we're building a desktop. So this little thing will be, you know, basically between 400 and 600 should get you where you're going. The way to figure out exactly how many watts your computer's going to take... is to add up all of the wattages each of your components need, and then add some so that you can upgrade.
Are online power supply calculators where you go CPU type, system board, RAM, monitor, click, click, bang, add, and it does it for you, just so that you guys know. So you might want to Google one of those up.
Cool.
Unless you have some really crazy configuration, I'm going to take anything between four... basically 400 and up. will probably be absolutely fine for you guys. You can, if you can't figure out how much wattage something is, the calculator doesn't work for you, you can find out the wattage of a component in its manual, a third-party vendor site, or a manufacturer website. Some power supplies have a little switch to select the correct voltage for the country that you live in. If you select a voltage that is too low, your computer simply will not boot. If you select a voltage that is too high, you will probably wreck your power supply as well as other components. Personally, I try and choose power supplies that automatically sense the correct voltage because I don't need that kind of excitement in my life, and they're becoming much more popular. And they usually work.
Ours don't. The ones in our new computers don't auto-sense, just so you know.
Fair enough. Well, I'll remember that if I ever go to America and try and plug the thing in. Okay, any questions on power supplies and power and Ohm's law, which you do not have to know for your test? The only thing you need to know is that your computer power supplies are measured in wattage, and you need enough to actually run your computer.
If you are interested in the Ohm's law and a more descriptive explanation of it, up on the QCAT website there is, under general instructions, a thing called electricityexplanation.mp3, and that goes into it in more detail if anyone cares, but it's optional.
And you get to hear
my... be in the ITE lab recordings, too.
Oh my. You get to hear my clueless self being walked through Ohm's law.
I need to listen to that when I have it.
I need to listen to that one too.
I always think of that as like water or river. You know, it's just, you know,
the amount of electrons
will be is the amount of water and the force. It depends on, you know, how fast, you know, the current force behind it.
I don't even know if you can find a 250 watt power supply anymore.
The only minor problem with that, and it won't affect us, but there's no such thing as impedance and backward EMF in a river. So as long as you don't get too complex, that analogy will hold up.
I don't even know what that is, so we won't worry about it.
Yeah, just the base, you know, basic idea, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
So anywhere from around 400 to 600...
somewhere around there should be plenty.
On the other hand, if you do get an 800-watt power supply and you don't have, and the components you have don't use that much power, it doesn't hurt anything, and it will help you out in the future if you really decide you need to expand things. So,
yeah,
getting a power supply
money.
That's quite a bit over wouldn't hurt. You'd be spending lots of money, but it wouldn't hurt.
Wasn't it slightly less efficient to run a higher wattage power supply at a lower draw than it is to actually get one that's more accurately calibrated? I'll have to talk to some friends on that.
I don't know.
I think it matters. It can't matter that much. People do it.
Yeah, just because people do it doesn't mean it's right. I'll check into that one. The other thing, and I don't know whether Grace has mentioned this yet or whether she intends to, when you buy a power supply, make sure it's got the right number of power connectors for the things you're going to plug in. How many SATA drives are you going to hook in? How many Molexes do you need? How many of the other connectors do you need? It's better to actually buy one with more connectors than you need than to have those stupid little wire adapters that'll work for 2 years and then suddenly short out and make your power supply go bang when you push them the wrong way in your case.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. A lot of the new ones come with all sorts of connectors. So, I mean, unless you're buying you get what you pay for, buy something nice, and you'll have plenty of connectors to go. Questions on power supplies and how to select it.
More questions was her first two words there.
Okay, I guess not. Cool. We're going to talk about motherboards next. The motherboard is the main printed circuit in a computer. It contains the electrical pathways, referred to as buses, that carry data between components. The motherboard holds the central processing unit, or CPU, RAM, expansion slots, heatsink slash fan assemblies.
Can you even find 250 watt power supplies anymore?
Look, I got a 65 watt one last year, so you must be able to.
Actually, you can. There are certain low wattage power supplies for things like mini ITX systems, and they will not fit in your ATX case. So you can actually buy a 6500 watt power supply if you're putting it into a mini ITX, but you probably have the wrong form factor. Move that microphone up a little bit, Breath Monster.
Yeah, okay.
There we go. She'll be bringing in a Sennheiser tomorrow.
This thing is, well, I'll be at home tomorrow because it's study group, so you'll have mail in the Sennheisers and it'll be so much better. Alright. We've got the heatsink / fan assembly. Go ahead.
Sorry, I was just shutting up my computer.
Bio supplies? You would cut out there. Okay. Alright, so we've got the chipsets, embedded wires that interconnect the motherboard components. The motherboard also contains your connectors for internal as well as external connectors for keyboards, sound devices, monitors, and USB devices. Remember, form factor refers to the size and shape. This dictates where and how components are placed on the motherboard and your choice of computer cases. The most common form factor for computers used to be AT form factor, based on the IBM's AT motherboard. These motherboards could be up to a foot wide, and obviously people wanted smaller computers, so new form factors had to be created. The ATX form factor is the most common motherboard today, which has many improvements over the AT form factor. This is in your test. The other common form factor is going to be the BTX form factor. Not nearly as common. Most common ATX, your second will be BTX. In the ATX motherboard, the improvements were that the cases were designed to go ahead.
In lots of the catalogs here, they refer to them as micro ATX.
Okay. Yeah, so micro ATX is a different form factor. It's just a shrunk down little version of the ATX form factor.
If I remember correctly, it's 9.6 inches by 9.6 inches for micro ATX?
Yeah, you're correct.
Some cases can hold either kind of board.
Yeah, a case that can hold an ATX board will usually hold a micro ATX board because an ATX board is actually wider. Sorry, Pat, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, that's okay. I was listening to you. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I finished. I was just saying that the ATX ones are actually wider than the micro ATX ones, so the ATX ones jut further out to the right. They're usually 9.6 inches high, and they're 11 or 12 inches wide. They're actually a wider board. I prefer them because they're not so squished. You tend to find that there's more RAM banks and more space for connectors and things on the ATX boards. If you've got a case that's big enough to take it, otherwise, yeah, there are reasons why you go for the smaller ones.
If it's a low-profile sort of thing, smaller, and you can have smaller cases, I'd go for ATX myself as well.
Now, the ATX versus the BTX, are they mounted differently?
Yeah, the components are actually mounted in different places. Couldn't tell you, and I used to know at one point, but you can always look it up on Wikipedia.
How the motherboard's mounted into the case?
Yeah, how it's all I think it's all mounted into the case the same way, but the actual components are in different places.
It's actually a different form factor and different layout. There are some cases that will take ATX and BTX, but BTX... Well, I don't know. Maybe you guys have seen more of it than I have, but I haven't seen BTX really take on too well.
No, it's just the second most popular one.
Is it the BTX that's mounted usually in the mini tower?
No, that's the micro ATX or the low profile LP. They're called LPX.
Doesn't matter. Just you can concern yourself with ATX and micro ATX, you'll be good. You only need to know the other ones exist. You don't need to know much about BTX and stuff.
It just happens to be a question on one of your tests, and that's why I'm bringing it up. But you guys are working in your labs on ATX cases and form factors mainly, so that's where we're going. Okay, so the improvements from AT. For an ATX motherboard. The ATX motherboard's cases are designed to accommodate external integrated ports on the motherboard. The power supply is connected by a single keyed 20 or 24-pin connector for less confusion, and power can be turned off by sending a signal to the motherboard instead of by using a power kill switch, so we have the reset button on our cases. A lot of us do.
Does anybody remember when we used to use AT cases and we had dual-pole single-throw switches?
How did that work? No.
Basically, it cuts both sides of the switch off, so it actually breaks the connection between active and neutral. But the problem with the dual-pole single-throw switch wasn't that it was dual-pole single-throw, it was the fact that 240 volts was brought to the front of the case. So from the power at the back, you had a cable that brought 240 volts right to the front of the case and then took it back to the power supply. And in fact, one of the cables I had actually had four spade lugs sticking upwards, and if you put your hand in on the wrong angle into the case and dropped your finger across that 240 volts, wham. So believe me, ATX is much better. Grace has been belted by 240 over here. She can attest that it hurts a little bit more than 110, and it's quite unpleasant.
That is not fun.
Sounds like a super wake-up call.
Oh yeah it is. It's pretty much quite an experience that nobody wants. word of warning, some manufacturers build computers using their own proprietary form factors that are similar to ATX, but not quite, so their components won't be compatible with anything else in a normal ATX board. So we don't really want to deal with... All right.
And
Dell.
Yeah, Dell. HP Torx screws, anyone?
At least you can replace those.
Sometimes. Some of them have actually got a special long thread that is not easily replaced, and you've actually got an eighth of an inch of thread that doesn't, of shaft that doesn't have thread on it. HP really did that. I don't know why, but there you go.
Oh, who knows? All right. Now that I've put you all to sleep, we're going to talk about your tasks for this week, or task as it is. For this week, the only thing that you guys are going to have do is 1.1.2. That is your jobs worksheet, and you are going to research three jobs on a website. Try Craigslist in America, try Monster if you're brave,
Seek if you're in Australia.
Trying to think of other ones. Jobs.com in America. There are all sorts of things you can look
Monster.
At.
Now, this is pretend.
Not Monster. Career
you do
builder.
Not have to be able to do the job, okay? Yes, we know you're blind, but you know, just a technician job. Find one. Maybe it'll be a job you'd like to do. You don't actually have to be able to do it. It's just so that we can actually prove that you've got some research skills and you can find a job or a job listing for something that you might like to do.
Yeah, basically, and it's dreaming. What kind of things might I want to do after I get out of this course? And what certifications might I need to do these things? What do I need to work towards, basically? And then you write about 3 to 4 sentences, you know, whatever. Just a quick, what I might want, whichever job you think you would like best. And answer that we're not discussing it in class. That is a written, quick little written thing. Doesn't need to be great. Doesn't need to be an essay. Just basically why you might want one of those jobs.
I want the job because it pays lots and will teach me stuff. That's basically what we're after.
That's almost sufficient.
There is no essay writing in this course, or half of the students we had through previously would have failed dismally.
Yep, me too. I am one of those students because I would just get bored anyway. The other thing we're going to do in study group, besides job, if you want help with your job worksheet, come on in, by all means. The other thing we're going to start doing is we're going to start working on 1.4.7. And if you are afraid of doing this worksheet, you need to come to study group because we are going to start working on this worksheet and go through and learn how to research and build computer components. So if you can come to study group and work with us there, that's what we'll be working on the job stuff if anyone needs help with the job worksheet, and we'll be starting 1.4.7 and helping you guys pick out power supplies and start putting this whole thing together.
Will that be recorded at all? Because I won't be able to make tomorrow.
Yeah,
it will.
Where are we putting the study group?
I'll make a folder.
Yeah.
It'll probably be called study group.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. How about that?
Last week's... go ahead.
No, I'll call the folder Yellow Kitten Flytrap.
No.
It'll be
it wasn't that. I just
it'll
didn't
be
know there was a place for it.
I'll be making
there
one.
There will be.
Okay.
Last week's study group wasn't much. I mean, there wasn't really any reason to put that up because... I think everybody figured out what they're doing anyway, so this week we'll probably actually put that one up.
Are these in the non-graphical labs, in the non-graphical labs zip archive?
They absolutely are.
That's why I made the zip.
I like that. I wish we'd had that for exploration.
You could, but nobody's requested it.
Aren't the labs still under mod for that anyway?
Yeah, they're still under
mod. Yeah, they're still being modified. I've still got to modify a few of the labs, so...
okay. That makes sense.
Seriously? Free download manager? Click the folder.
Yeah. I only got the modified ones for exploration anyway, so...
Yeah, that's all you want. Okay, any questions before we break for the day?
Study group for tomorrow, same time as lecture?
Same time as lecture. Come on over.
Same time, same channel. If you can.
Not a requirement, but if you for this worksheet, it might be a good idea if you're scared of it, because a lot of people, this worksheet just really scares.
But you just go on Ventrilo for that, do you?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can do it from home, too. If you've got Ventrilo set up on your laptop, you just go through and do it from home. You don't have to come in here to do
Is
it.
Is that free Ventrilo? Or
yep,
do you have to
it's
buy
free.
It?
Yeah.
Okay.
All the resources are on the Cavi website, which we'll show you, along with an excellent tutorial done by Sean.
Yeah.
If I had to pay for Ventrilo, I wouldn't be in this class.
Fair enough.
We have to pay for the hosting on the server, though, so we get to pay, but you don't, so isn't that good?
You guys actually have a really good deal on it, too.
Excellent deal on a 50-user license. Any other
questions? For information.
Uh-huh, go ahead.
For information, the color detector is named the Colorino.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
Is that the one with
Does
the light
anyone
probe in
know
it?
Where the...
Quite a few of them have light probes in, I think.
Does anyone know what?
Yeah, it has a light probe. Yeah, it does.